Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experiment. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. You got a question for RLM? It's time to get some answers, baby.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I want to thank you for being here. This is going to be really a special, special, special podcast. You know, I'm looking outside of this huge picture window, and there were just one deer and her babies just walked down the hill while the song was playing. So I'm telling you, this is a sign. This is just a good feeling, and I got chills already. Reality spirituality, I get a lot of new listeners every week, and I just want to share really quick before I bring my guest on the program. Reality spirituality, what the hell is this show about? Who is this Rebecca Norrington happiness specialist anyway? Well, what I like to share with my audience is, when I was younger, I wanted two things. I wanted to live to my potential, and I wanted to be happy. And this thing about being happy just stuck with me, and I always thought, just like most people, not thought, I was programmed to believe that happiness came from doing something. Happiness came from achieving. Happiness came from relationships. Happiness came from anything external. And I'm here to tell you, I don't know if you heard it before, but this happiness is an inside job. And when I say happiness, I'm really talking about a foundation of what I'm rooted in. And what I'm rooted in and what I practice on a daily basis are just a few things, and they are acceptance of myself, acceptance of other people, living consciously, being okay with uncertainty, allowing, trusting, letting go, choosing my perspective, choosing my focus. Oh, this is a hard one. This is last week's topic. Staying out of everybody else's business. And it is a practice. It is a skill that you develop. But before that, you have to make a commitment. It is a commitment. It is a daily moment-by-moment commitment as to how you want to feel. What kind of energy are you vibrating? What kind of energy are you sharing with the world? And whatever energy you're sharing, that's what you are contributing. So enough about me. Let me just share my last definition of happiness. My definition is, being happy means to be at peace, feel content, feel satisfied, regardless of what's happening and regardless of what's not happening. And I'm telling you right now, It ain't easy, folks. But today, I have a guest on the show, and I've known Robert Sharpe, I don't know how many years. I would say at least, let's see, the book was 14. Is it 4 years? I'll bring him on soon. 4 years that I've known this man. And let me say, we've never met, but I feel like he's part of my family. He's definitely part of the Blog Talk Radio family. Let me bring Robert on really quick. Robert Sharpe, welcome to Reality Spirituality. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Good day, Rebecca. I love talking to my family members.
Oh, and before we get into your book, I just want to give a brief introduction. You know, I'm not used to introducing people, but let me just share an introduction, which so the audience has a sense of who you are and a little bit about your book that is This book is so inspirational. I'm telling you, bring a Kleenex while you're reading it. You're going to need it. But more than one in six Americans working full-time or part-time report assisting with the care of an elderly or disabled family member, a relative, or a friend. The book that Robert wrote, the book is called Heart and Soul of Caring, highlights 11 true and unique stories of the challenges and the joys of being a caregiver for a loved one. Each story gives tribute and honor to the care and receiver, to the care receiver and to the essence of their spirit. Robert Sharp is the founder of BiteRadio.me, that's spelled B-I-T-E, radio.me, host and producer of Bringing Inspiration to the Earth radio show, and he's an author of more than one book. The first book, Joy Potential, Where You Least Expect It, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, and the photo book, Nature's Inspiration, Volume 1. For more information about the Heart and Soul of Caring or to book Robert Sharp as a guest, I got him first on your show or podcast. You can email Robert at biteradio@me.com. That's biteradio@me.com. Or you can call him at area code 643-808-0777. Robert Sharp, welcome to Reality Spirituality. Let's talk about your book.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, and boy, I can't think of a better launch to talk about the book than your show. You will keep it real, and I love that.
Oh, good. I'm getting chills already. Can you believe those deer that just walked by, and I mean, all of them, just like a little gang of deer, just at the start. They wanted to listen to the show, too, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they can tell a good vibration when it's around. So I'm sure it's emanating right from your room there.
Aww. So let's dive right in. Let's just dive right in. This book, The Heart and Soul of Caring, it is an easy read, and I'm telling you, I like easy reads. And I read it, and I actually went back and forth reading it over a period of 2 days. And I wrote notes. I don't know if people are supposed to be writing notes on the book, but I did. I wrote notes on every little story. And I want to ask you, The Heart and Soul of Caring, it is about 11 unique stories of people. What was your inspiration to write this book and to put this book together?
Well, it started with a waking dream. It was probably almost about 2 years ago. You know, I'm one of those who pays attention to my dreams, and just as I was waking up one day in the dream, you know, from the dream state, you know, the idea of doing a caregiver book was right there, you know, and the main thing that stood out with that was to be sure to give that, like you mentioned, the honor and that tribute to the care receiver, you know, because you know, without them, there would be no need for a caregiver relationship. And quite often, you know, in these types of situations, like in Alzheimer's or dementia types of things, the essence of the person can sometimes get lost or forgotten. And so I just wanted to make sure that, you know, the stories that I got together, and I knew quite a few people who were in a caregiving situation, I just knew that this would be the right approach, you know, aside from other books out there who focus, you know, primarily on the caregiver, but that's important. But, again, you know, without the care receiver, there wouldn't be a need for a giver.
Yeah, that's very true, and that's a unique way to highlight the story. You're right. It takes two to tango, and it does take two people to, well, even sometimes more, two people to go through this. How did you choose your stories? How did you choose these people to tell their stories?
Well, most of the people I knew ahead of time that were, you know, either former guests who talked about the topic or certain listeners of the show. Some people were, you know, right in my vicinity who, when I talked about doing the book, volunteered that to do that, and just going out through social media, and asking caregivers if they'd be interested in sharing their stories. And the ones that were selected, I really wanted a variety of circumstances, because even though there's, 11 unique stories, every single caregiver, receiver, relationship is unique in its own way. So, but I wanted to present just some, typical kinds of relationship experiences that are out there right now.
You know, one of the things when I first started reading this book, when I first started reading The Heart and Soul of Caring, I've said it before on my show, I'm writing my second book, which is called Program for Unhappiness. And the one of the authors used a word all throughout their story, and this word just stuck with me, and this word is a programmed word. When I say programmed, I mean we were not born feeling sad. We were not born feeling sad. We had to learn what the definition of sad, what it meant to be sad, what are the circumstances. And then, okay, somebody dies or like this, or you have a family member that needs 24/7 care, and now that's a sad situation. And I've heard that word so many times, and I have to say, I have a lot of hair on my head, but I want to pull my hair out every time I hear these words that are programmed words. And not to say that this is not a challenging situation, this is not a challenging circumstance, but to label something sad is a perspective that we were programmed to believe. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I understand what you're saying, to view certain circumstances or things happening as sad. But I also believe that there is that emotion that one feels that is, it's not happiness, Just as happiness is an emotion, I feel sad is too. And, in one sense, I know that, labeling a situation as good or bad, happy or sad, you were kind of following into what you talked about, the programmed aspect of life. But I also too believe that, it's a word that is used to identify emotions that are being felt, a certain subset of emotions that are being felt.
Right, right. And I get it, but what I want to say is, especially that the people that are listening, that life is really an experience without judgment. And so what I'm saying is this energy or this vibration, I'm not saying there's anything, change it. No, don't change it. But there's just a different perspective. And when I view something as sad, my energy also takes on that. And I'm just looking at, am I able to be more helpful? I shared with you a little bit, my father had dementia the last, 3-4 years of his life, and one of the things that I was really able to listen, and this is no pat on my back, but I didn't do it overnight, but I looked at this man who all my life was criticizing, mean, he was always right, everybody else was always wrong, and when he was in that state, when he got, full-blown dementia, and we had to send him to adult daycare, and finally, the last year and a half of his life, he was going into hospice, and all of a sudden, he was in a room with a lot of people, and so he started socializing. So they kicked him out of hospice for a year and a half. I'm saying all this to say that just anybody listening, be mindful of your vibration and how you label, because you are there to assist. You are there to do, to bring as much of self as possible. That's really what I want to say without any kind of judgment or criticizing the word sad. Does that make more sense?
No, it does. You know, and I think one important part in that equation that you said was, identifying a situation as sad and then having that then reflect back onto your energy. So, I mean, I think it really revolves around the individual's experience. You know, so it's if you are... Your body and emotions are letting you know that these are what sad looks and feels like, then, experience that. Now, if there is a situation outside of you, like, having to work with a loved one, a father, who is in a, a hospice-type situation, rather than, don't necessarily project that situation is sad. So my point was is that, there are situations and then there are feelings. Living and experiencing those feelings is a legitimate reality, but allowing situations to influence that is something that you really want to avoid.
Yes, and I'm gonna throw this in only because you know how pushy I am, right? Pushy. I'm gonna throw this in: programmed feelings, and then we're going to another topic.
Okay,
Robert, do you have a favorite? There are 11 stories here. Do you have?
Right.
Okay, this is my question to you. How did you grow? What did you learn from putting these stories together? Do you have your personal growth, meaning what did you experience and how did you get to, this book is so well put together. I just love how it just flows, and then you at the end of each story, you write your own, you have your perspective and you have a page or two pages of your view. What did you learn from putting all these stories together about you?
First of all, I have to mention my sister's story, the very first story in the book. And that was, when I first, got the idea of putting them together, of course, one of my thoughts that followed almost immediately afterwards was my situation where my sister was a caregiver for my mother toward the end of her life. And so, of course, go to family first. They say, hey, Paula, would you mind, this is what I want to do. Would you mind, is this something that you wouldn't mind, providing a story? And she said, sure, no problem. And so she supplied the story rather quickly. And in that story, she talked about one of the things that made her sad that she wasn't able to get my mother to reconcile with her second son, and that second son was me. And it wasn't until I read that story that I realized my sister had made such an effort to try to bridge that chasm. And I mean, I know the efforts I had made, but I didn't know the efforts from the other side of it. And it was right then when I saw that, it just, I was like, lump in my throat, and it's like, okay, this is something that, was really important. And the idea for me then at that point was to, get people talking, about, when they're in that particular stage of life, talking about what to do, try to bridge those chasms, just to get conversation going. And so that was the thing that I learned real quick, right up front, just open communication can be really, healing when it comes time to that time in life. And then as I got to other stories, it was just incredible. There were, even though each was unique, there were some very common threads, about the challenges and just the joys. You know, each person seemed to get some kind of strength of spirit out of their caregiving experience, even if it was a challenging one.
What were some of the running themes that you found in the stories?
Well,
because I'm thinking of one right now, which is for me, people do not talk, or people do not want to talk about the future death of a parent, being incapacitated, having to go into nursing home. People don't want to talk about the hard stuff, and that's another program that you just don't talk about it. And I have to say that one of the things I'm preparing my son for, I've been preparing him since my father died in 2008, is for my own death. And not in a grim way, but I talk to my father now. We have conversations. We make fun of him. I mean, this is really bad. This is so bad, but I'm putting it out on the air. When my father was in a state, and he didn't recognize my son, and when my son would visit him in the nursing home, so I said, okay, I hope nobody's listening, Robert. Are you ready for this?
I hope everybody's listening.
I know, but that's just that I hope nobody's listening.
Okay, go ahead.
One of the things I said, he doesn't even recognize you. Why don't you just pretend you're his doctor?
Oh, no.
I know. See, is that terrible? So Nathan went in and... Yeah, hi, I'm your doctor. I mean, here it is, this 20-year-old, and he's just pretending to be a doctor. And my father, oh, hi, doctor. So when I'm saying all this is there's humor in all of it. And my father was such a jokester himself. But to find, I know it's difficult. I know it's easy to say, but there's a lightness that you can also bring to the situation. And that comes with just being open and speaking and talking about the situation before it happens. I think you say it in your book about being prepared, getting prepared, but even more than that, have a conversation, especially with your children, about your own future demise. How's that for a cheery topic?
Yeah, let's lighten up the conversation. No, you know, but it's true. You know, the we are programmed to try and avoid the conversations of end of life conversations,
even if we're not near it. Because why is that? Because what do you think?
No, I was just going to say that, you know, that we tend to avoid that, and I think that. Some of it.
My question is, why do we avoid it? Why do we avoid it? I really want. Why? What's your perspective on why people avoid that?
Well, I think it can be twofold. Number one, people, I think for themselves, you know, it's hard to imagine not being alive. You know what I mean? Or what will life be like when I'm not here? And you know, in one story with Melania, that was her concern. What's going to happen if, you know, with Orton, her husband, if I'm not here, you know? So there's that one side, you know, I don't know what it'll be like afterwards or and this is another one of those kind of running themes that, you know, a couple of the stories that people were afraid of going to hell, you know, I mean, and that fire and brimstone and judgment that they've been programmed to believe is what follows death, you know. So there's that from the personal side, and then there, from the other side of who you are talking to, it's like, you know, I don't want to make them sad. This may be uncomfortable for them to talk about because, you know, with me being gone. So rather than make them uncomfortable and me uncomfortable, we just won't talk about it.
Mm. Well, and that is the whole programming of being uncomfortable talking about something that is inevitable. I mean, when you really think about it, it is everybody's gonna die, and not to be able to talk about it, especially in a way of, I mean, we can talk about anything else, and it's just, I just think it's fascinating how, and not all cultures are like this, not all cultures are like the United States, but it's just, it's a roadblock, and I think that adds to the sadness, the heaviness, the angst, the anxiety when that situation comes, because it's all, you know, it's like a blind side. What do you think?
Yeah, you're right in that. You know, that if we hadn't talked about this moment, you know, then, you know, number one is, well, you know, I'm not prepared, you know, as a survivor to deal with the aftermath. You know, I mean, I may, you know, if I didn't talk with, you know, my mother or father about, you know, end-of-life situations, you know, there are a whole lot of decisions to be made when that happens, you know, and if you hadn't talked about it ahead of time, you know, you still have to make the decision, but then there's always going to be that little bit of nagging, well, was this what they would have wanted, you know, and, you know, without having talked about it, you don't know for sure. I mean, you know, at a point after someone's dead, there's just, you know, there's no going back to try to find out what it is that they want or wanted. So, you know, there's a lot of that kind of, you know, what if, you know, and decisions that, you know, have to be made just by guessing or thinking that you know what the person would have wanted when, in fact, you know, it may not be. And you know, it, like you say, it's inevitable. It's going to happen to every single one of us at some particular time. And, you know, it's just, you know, a part of life. Death is a part of life.
Right, right. But, you know, one of the things I have to say that your book lit a fire under me, because I do have a trust, but I don't have the directive. I mean, because I didn't have anybody to sign it here. And, you know, I'm in Oregon. I don't know anybody. Doctor can't sign it. People don't know me, but I am. But I got my directives already. I got them all printed out, ready for a signature. I've got a visitor coming in a couple of weeks and sign it. No tube. Check me out of here.
Right.
So I want to say thank you for that, because you really got me. Hey, all this stuff has to be in order. What I would like has to be in order, and I want to make it as easy as possible for my son.
Yeah, you know, and quite honestly, that's one of the best gifts you can give, you know, those who survive you, is having clear instructions on what you do want and what you don't want. And, you know, then it becomes, I mean, it's just a matter of following through on your wishes, you know, and that, to me, that's the ultimate respect a survivor can do, is to honor the wishes of one who has passed.
Yes, yes. You know, another story, I don't remember exactly which author it was, but another story in the book, which is something that's not really talked about, is the, well, at least, you know, it is the anger and the frustration and the irritation that the caregiver gets while doing all of these, or taking care, or having to pay it. I mean, it is a hard task to sit there and to take care of somebody 24/7. It is. I remember my own mother would get mad at my father. I mean, really angry. I mean, so angry. But mm-hmm. The funny thing is, he was the bully most of the relationship, and now she comes up and she's, you know, getting back at him for all the mean things he used to do and say to her. And it was comical in a way. But that frustration and that anger, and then sometimes there's guilt for being angry with somebody that can't do any better for themselves.
Yeah, Yeah, boy, anger and frustration, and a lot of that. I mean, in the natural course of life, you know, you kind of plan out your life, how you're going to live it, and then all of a sudden, you know, circumstances just pop in, and you have to kind of shift a lot of your life to be a caregiver, and you know, a lot of times a caregiver will put things they wanted to do on the back burner, or some of their goals, or even some of their daily life and their hobbies and joys. They'll put them on the back burner to, you know, put the care receiver first. And, you know, and that's one of the things in several of the stories. You know, the caregivers a lot of times recognize the importance of balancing the caregiver relationship with their life, you know, and integrating it into their life, and to recognize that it's not selfish to want to go out and have a good time while your care receiver is maybe, you know, doing poorly, you know, but you know, it's just real important to maintain that balance, and for those like Tom Wynn, when he and his wife were caregivers for his parents and his grandmother, you know, they had to make a conscious effort to make sure that, you know, their life was in balance, that they got, you know, some people who could come in and relieve them for the duty so that they could go and have their away time, you know, and their, you know, alone time, and continue to do some of the things that they enjoyed. But you know, he's quite honestly, you know, an exception to many people. I mean, in the sense that he realized that that was important, and they actually had to make it happen rather than just, you know, fall into the role of simply being a caregiver. Period. My life's on hold. You've got all my attention.
Yes, and there's a wealth of emotions there, from feeling stuck. Well, I'm just going to be really hard with it, feeling stuck with this situation, and then feeling bad for getting angry, and then feeling bad for why am I, you know, I just watched it with my mother, and she refused to accept the fact that my father turned into a child. I mean, here is this man who did everything and took care of everything, and now she was stuck with this child, and I'm telling you, she was so angry. She was so angry at his state, and why can't he? Well, I remember her getting mad at me and saying, "Why can't he walk? Well, what's wrong?" And I said, "Mom, he just can't walk anymore." And this is one of my favorites. This is another one of my favorite funny stories. My father got to a point where, I even took a picture of this, Robert. I took a picture of this. He's having lunch. He had a hamburger. And you know what a hamburger looks like. Everybody knows what a hamburger looks like with the bun. And he wanted mayonnaise on his hamburger. I'm going to have to find this picture and send you a copy of it. He wanted mayonnaise on the hamburger. So he opened up the mayonnaise packet, and he put little dabs of mayonnaise on the top of the bun. Now, I thought that was hysterical, but my mother was pissed off. So mad. What are you doing? And she snatched it from him. So I'm just being real with the frustration and the anger of, like you said, there's no talking about it. And when you have this looking in the future and thinking that everything's going to be okay, you know, the future is all uncertain. And to be able to live with being okay with uncertainty and acceptance of uncertainty, that's a big practice to have. But most don't.
Yeah, you know that. You know, and you're right. I mean, as far as, you know, our next moment isn't even promised to us. So, and you know, let alone circumstances of having to, you know, care for a spouse who, you know, reverts to child like, you know, behaviors. And you know, and you're right in this, that, you know, anger, you know, can, you know, creep in. And now you being able to laugh at the mayonnaise on the hamburger bun is a wonderful, I mean, I've talked to some people who have been in similar situations, you know, and they just, you know, look for humor, you know, look for, to try and lighten it up, because it's not an easy thing. And quite honestly, I'm sure your father, if he had his choice, he would not have wanted to be in that position, you know, to do that, to be like that, you know. So, you know, you've got a case where you have someone who is in a certain state, and you know that they don't they're cognizant of that and don't like it, you know, and may, you know, react, you know, angrily, or that they don't even know what they're doing is, you know, unusual or unique or out of character. You know, so that an angry response from someone like your mother doesn't make sense, you know, like, you know, I wanted mayonnaise, I got mayonnaise, you know, what's the big deal? But see, that's the case where, and it's hard to do, is to, you know, get that lighter perspective, you know, when you're in the midst of it and you're having to, you know, especially if it's in-home care, you know, where you have to be there, you know, 24/7, or someone has to be there, and you're really having to attend to so many needs, it can be hard sometimes to step out of the, you know, why aren't you doing what I want you to do kind of thing, and find humor. But it's important, because if not only for your sanity, but also to make situations less tense.
Yes. You know, you brought up another really, really good point. A really good point about, oh, gee, I can't even believe I lost my track of thought. Hold on a second, because it was really a good one while you were talking. Ooh, it'll come back to me. Were there people that, the people that contributed to your book, the 11 people, did they tell you either verbally or afterwards that being able to contribute their story also gave them a sense of a release or peace or uplifting? I mean, being able to get their story out.
Yeah, there were. I mean, several of them, you know, said, obviously, thank you for, you know, putting the story in there. But there was that that sense of relief, you know, of being able to kind of tell the story, identify the challenges. And, you know, and when I set out to get these stories, I let the people know that the format that I really wanted for the stories would be, number one, you know, that recognition of the essence of the care receiver. Who were they? Tell us about, you know, your loved one. And then, you know, to talk about the challenges and the joys, you know, and because there were, you know, quite often we focus on the challenges, you know, of those situations and anger and frustration. But a couple people, after they submitted their story, they said, you know, I really never really focused on the joy, you know, of, or what I learned from, or what, you know, what the positive result in my life, the positive effect on my life that this had. And so,
yeah,
you know, and so they were happy to be able to have that now. So when they think of their loved one, sure, some of those challenging things are going to come up, but also those joys are going to pop up, you know. And so, you know, they were, there was probably about 3 out of the 11 really specifically commented on, you know, the idea of identifying the joy or the positive impact that it had on their life.
One woman too said that
after she got the book and read through the stories, she felt such a sense of community that she really didn't have when going through the experience, you know, recognizing all of what people went through and what she went through. There was so much that resonated with her that, and she was one that didn't really share much of what she was going through at the time, you know, in caring for her father. So to her, there was that sense of community that she hadn't felt before, and it just made her feel better, realizing even though she may have felt alone at the time, she really wasn't alone.
Right, right. Well, listen, that's such a good point, because I know that whatever anybody is going through, what I'm going through, people have challenges, and we all go through similar things, whether we want to talk about it or don't talk about it. The loneliness, the frustration, the why is this happening? All of those things are just common behavior. I mean, in other words, we're so alike. We're more alike than we are different. I believe. And I remembered what I wanted to say. I remember what you made a comment about my father probably not wanting to experience that. I have a little different take on it, because my father was a person that did everything. I mean, from the bills to the cars being fixed to the house repairs to, I mean, he had such a burden. When I say, scratch that word, burden. He had such a responsibility all of his life, always was the leader, the doer. I think my perspective is he was sick and tired of that, doing all that stuff. And he just wanted easy, simple, end of the life, skate through it. And I really think that the last few years, even with the dementia, he enjoyed it. I mean, he would sing all the time. It was such a simple state. I think that it was a relief to get from under all of the pressures and the responsibilities. And I love my mother, but, you know, she let him do everything, because, listen, there's some relationships, one is the leader, one is the doer, and there's, you know, some 50-50, but my father did everything. So I think it was a relief for him, and that's how I looked at it. And thank goodness that he had those last 3 years just to sit back and watch cars go by.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it can be, I mean, it's so unique, you know, and in that particular case, you know, it could have been a relief, you know, and then maybe sitting back with some kind of satisfaction that, you know, now you know what I had to do all of those years, you know, kind of thing.
Yes.
You know? So, you know, and you know, that does, I mean, that's one possible reaction. And one of the stories, Tammy Davis with her father, you know, her father was a very independent person. So, and I was thinking about him. You know, he in particular wasn't really, just did not like the fact that he couldn't do what he used to do and be that independent self, you know. And then, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, many times, you know, it's those who are fiercely independent in life, you know, throughout the majority of their life, who then find themselves having to be dependent on others for certain things. That's their life lesson in a way. You know, it's like some humility, you know, and having to be dependent on others, but to recognize that, you know, there is that give and receive aspect, and, you know, and going through life completely as a giver or as a receiver, you know, sometimes life puts in a little circumstances that will balance your perspective.
Yeah, that well said. And all I like to do is, when I'm sharing my stories, is just to share another perspective, and also that there are so many different ways to look at the same situation. And if anybody is out there listening to this and you have a situation like this, you know, there's tend to be programmed to look at it one way. Okay, this is what's happening, and there's more perspectives. So all I want to do on this planet, Robert Sharp, is to there's tons of different perspectives that you can look at the same situation, and maybe if you look at it differently, like maybe looking at what are you grateful for, or what can you find funny, or what can you find light about it, look at it differently, and then there will be a shift in your energy. I was reading the one story with that one woman. I got to put my glasses on now. The lady that told the story. I mean, I was just feeling her. The lady?
Milana?
That, yes. That
yeah, Horton and Milana. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I just felt spiritual connection to her, and I wanted to reach out and talk to her, and then you told me that she died, and I broke down. Like, I knew this woman based on how she wrote out her story. You could actually feel her story.
Yeah, and as you're talking right now, I mean, I just, my whole energy is just vibrating here, because I believe that, you know, whenever people will read her story, that she will be there, you know, she'll be there
yeah.
with them while they're reading that story. And, you know, and she was the one that was the caregiver who was so concerned about, you know, what would happen to her husband if she wasn't around. And that was part of the reason that I felt like I really needed to publish the book now, is because, you know, between the time that she submitted her story and of course it was published, she did pass on. And, you know, and it was, you know, her big concern of what would happen, you know, came to pass. And, you know, and the lesson, my comment on my little commentary after her story was, you know, taking care of the caregiver, you know, and that's such an important thing to keep in mind, you know, for caregivers, is that, you know, take care of yourself, you know, because if you don't do that, you know, you may not be around to be a caregiver, and not only for the person, you know, you're giving direct care to, but also for the other people in your life who, you know, benefit from your being here.
Yes. And another thing I want to add, which is so important too, is to get help. Get help. It took so long for my mother to bring somebody in that house. Get help. Mm-hmm. Get help with cooking. Get help with cleaning. Get help. Get help. And you can get, I mean, I don't understand these people that do it for a living, because, I mean, I'm bowing all the way down. But there are people out there that are just angels, and they love helping and doing. And just get help any way you can. I know it sounds, I don't know how it sounds, but get help. And don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah, that is so true, you know, and a couple of the stories, you know, the contributors were aware of, you know, the need for help and were able to do that. But for some people, you know, it's difficult to ask for help and to recognize that they can't do it all. I mean, I'm the one who's the caregiver. I'm responsible. I'm going to have to do it, and of course that can lead to, you know, some kind of feelings of being a martyr, of, you know, trying to do it all, and, you know, pat myself on the back for being able to do it all. And, you know, and there are times when, you know, just asking for help is, I mean, asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of giving up. Not a sign of some, you know, inadequacy on one's part, or even anything to be feel guilty or ashamed of, or any of that, all of that stuff. There are people, like you said, who are angels out there who are more than happy to help. And, you know, and if that's one thing too, you know, one of the stories is that helping them helps you. So if you help someone,
yeah,
you in turn are helped in some way.
That's right. And what you're describing about this, you know, asking for help makes me feel weak. That's just another program thought. It's just another program belief. I'm really into this programming, Robert, that it is,
you are?
It's the programming that we're fighting,
yeah,
and not really life itself. It's the program beliefs of circumstances. It really, when you get down to it and dissect it all, yeah, my father was a program. If you ask for help, you're weak. That's a program that's running. And
mm-hmm.
And I'm just my hands are in the praying position. Just please figure out, is it a belief that is a real belief, a true belief, or is this a programmed, man-made belief? And if you're following what everybody else is doing and feeling like what everybody else feels like, a little winky, wink, wink, it's a program. So just recognize that, and then when you recognize it, you can break free of it. I don't know. I'm just on this whole rant with people don't have to suffer. They don't have to suffer. It's unnecessary suffering when you're following a program. That's what I think.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And you know, the idea of suffering truly is a perspective. I mean, because, you know, if you just shift away from, you know, take a different view of the situation, step outside the situation. I mean, mm-hmm. suffering is a choice. Like happiness is a choice. Suffering is a choice as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know who I'm talking to.
And I know who I'm talking to. You gone to any restaurants and put your hands in any Jell-O lately?
No, but every time I see it, there's only one person I think of. Goodness.
So let me just share with the audience. You know, I've had this challenge with Robert for maybe the last 25 years. And I said, hey, you know, you need to loosen up a little bit, guy. Loosen up. Go to a restaurant, order Jell-O, and stick your hands in it. And you know that Robert Sharp, the author of The Heart and Soul of Caring, among the other books, won't put his hands in Jell-O?
Well,
we're
you know what?
Do a whole show about.
I may just surprise you one day. I just may. But it has to be in a restaurant, though, right?
A restaurant where everybody can see.
Okay, see, there you go. I knew that was the condition. I couldn't just do it in the privacy of my own home and snap a pic.
No, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. It's about getting out there and being. No,
yep.
It's about getting rid of that embarrassment, Gene.
There you go.
Well, listen, you do whatever you want to do, but I'm waiting. I'm not holding my breath, because I do
okay.
But I'm waiting
right.
for the whole Jell-O experience in the middle of the restaurant. Hey, everybody, look at me. Jell-O.
Take a picture and send it to Rebecca now.
You know, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Is there anything else that I'm going to let you take over? Is there anything else that we didn't talk about with the book or anything that you would like the audience to know? Please let them know where they can find you.
The only things I really want people to just recognize, and what I hope that comes from reading the book, is just first, you know, recognize that caregiving touches all of our lives at some point. So that is it is a universal experience. How we provide the services is as unique as the caregiver and receiver. And then you mentioned, you know, some differences, and there's that one story, and there are the sisters, Joyce and Martha, providing for their mother. And Joyce was a very particular type of person, wanted things a certain way and wanted everything to be perfect, and Martha was less so. And they were both care providers, and so they butt heads sometimes on the process, you know, of what was proper, and just recognize that, you know, each one is unique, and you know, as I mentioned in the book, their mother Fanny was probably, you know, thrilled that each was taking their own unique approach, you know, and what they were showing was probably something they showed their whole life. But if you're a sibling, you know, or you have siblings and you're caring for a parent, just recognize that there are different ways, and not, they're all right. You know, they're all okay as long as the care receiver, you know, receives the proper care. And just keep in mind the essence of the person receiving the care. You know, who that person is, treat them with the respect and dignity and the realization that even if some of that essence doesn't shine through, you know, right now at this point in life, just kind of hold that light for them and recognize and share that back to them. You know, that's something that, you know, when they make that transition, you know, they're going to, it might be top of mind, you know, to recognize that, you know, the light that they were. So that would be my final thoughts.
Oh, I love that. Well said. Well said. And again, for more information about the Heart and Soul of Caring or to book Robert Sharp as a guest on your show or podcast, you email him at biteradio@me.com. That's B-I-T-E radio@me.com. Or you can call area code 843-808-0777. And for more information, you can visit his website at biteradio.me. That's Bite, B-I-T-E, radio.me. Robert Sharp, what a great, great show. I want to thank you so much for being on Reality Spirituality. And thank you for sharing, and thank you for this book. It has changed. It has inspired me, and it has changed my life. And it just by making sure all this, my T's are crossed and my I's are dotted.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be the first, you being the first for this rollout. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, everybody. Thank you for listening to Reality Spirituality. And Reality Spirituality is heard every Sunday at 9 a.m. My website is RebeccaNorrington.com. And follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. My Instagram handle is Reality Spirituality. My YouTube channel is out there. Yes, you can watch videos of me on YouTube, Rebecca Norrington and or Reality Spirituality. My first book, Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness, can be purchased on Amazon.com and or Lulu.com. And my second book, Program for Unhappiness, which I'm telling you right now, this programming is a real deal, is real, people, is real. And the programming is the reason why you are responding, feeling. Just think about it. You know, you go to a child. I know this might sound wacky, but you go to a child that's just born, and you say, "Hey, guess what? Guess what, baby? Guess what? The house is burning down. Your parents just got in a car accident. You're ugly. You're stupid. You're going to be a loser." And that baby is going to look at you like, "What the heck is you're talking about?" It really is about the programming and recognizing which are man-made programs and which are universal concepts. And man-made programs can keep you feeling pretty bad about life, about the situation, about the challenges, but it is just a recognizing of programs. So Reality Spirituality, until next week, I just want to share with you, you are a physical extension of the universe. You're always changing. You're always growing. Be patient and be kind to yourself. Be your own best friend. Remember, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. You're listening to Reality Spirituality. Thank you, Robert Sharp, for being a guest on the show. Talk to you next week. Have a conscious week.
Yeah, oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality.